The date is the 18th of February, 2013, and I am interviewing Tilly Karasik. Her son Herb is with us. And Tilly lived at 67 Major from 1923 to 1942 when she got married, and then again from 1945 until 1952 when she lived on the upstairs flat. And I would just like to, Tilly, to start off by saying thank you very much for allowing me to come and speak to you.
You're very welcome.
Do you have some stories you would like to tell right off the start about your life on Major Street?
Well, I think that you should know that across the street there was a St. John's Convalescent Home run by the Anglican Church.
Now, when we're talking,
there was a nunnery.
Now, where was this on Major? Near what Major Street?
Right across 67.
And was that near Harvard?
Near college.
Okay, near college. Okay.
So, and we used to play next door to, my girlfriend lived next door to the nunnery. And we used to go into the nunnery, and they used to give us cookies when we were small. I think that's very interesting, because now there is a hospital in that spot where the St. John's Convalescent Home was. There is now a hospital.
Where, on Kensington, where you went for your eyes?
No, yeah, but it's on the other side. It's on Major Street.
Yeah, okay, but it's right down by college.
So that's that's the Kensington Nursing Home is there.
Yeah, but it's an eye clinic, Kensington Eye Clinic.
There's the office building, and behind it is the retirement home, and that's where the St. John's...
On Major Street.
I just want to ask one question before we move on. At what ages were you living in this neighborhood? When in 1923... to 1942, how old were you during those years?
I was from a young child to a teenager. I got married when I was 19.
Okay.
So I lived there all my life.
Okay.
And I went to Lansdowne School. That was on, there was an entrance on Robert Street for Lansdowne School, and there was a lane that you could cut across from Major Street to Robert Street, and at the end of the lane was a grocery store called Band's Grocery Store, and then across from that was Lansdowne School, which still stands today, and is on, the entrance is on Spadina.
For Lansdowne School.
Yeah.
Right. I think that grocery store just closed about 10 or 15 years ago. It was there for a long time.
Yeah, called Band.
Uh-huh. But so you went to school, you walked through the lane.
Usually, because you had to be there for 9, and usually I used to, like my sister said, every hair had to be in place.
Uh-huh.
But even as a child, I was always very, my appearance meant a great deal to me.
Well, I told you already, you are 90 and you look fabulous. When you walked through the lane, did you walk with other children?
Usually.
Uh-huh. So that was a common way of getting to school, using the lane.
Shortcut.
Right. Was the lane paved?
No, mud. Mud. But to go around, we had to go out to College Street from 67, which was in between Ulster and College. So you had to go out to College Street, around College to Robert, and then turn in. Consequently, we used to cut through, it was like a shortcut. And on the corner of Major Street, there was a drugstore called Rothbart's. And on Borden Street, Borden and College, was Coffler's. Coffler's, who owns Shoppers Drug Mart, now is a descendant of the Coffler that owned that store at Borden and College.
So that was really the first Shoppers Drug Mart, so to speak.
Well,
so
Coffler's.
It was
for many, many years. I can't remember it being Shoppers Drug Mart.
No, I'm sure it wasn't, but that was the first.
I know that it's the same Coffler.
Was that Murray Koffler, or would it have been his father?
It would be his father. The Kofflers are pharmacists for a long time.
Right. So what started off as that
Koffler on Borden?
On Borden, that eventually became Shoppers a few decades later, maybe.
Maybe.
A lot longer. I think Shoppers was in the 60s.
What was the pharmacy like at that time, the drugstore?
They sold everything.
Meaning?
Chocolate bars, medication, did the photo
developing. Yeah.
And they did everything. The one on the corner did everything.
And did you know the owners? Did the owners know
they
you?
They worked. Yeah, they knew who you were.
Uh-huh. So yeah. It was really a family
at that
store.
Time, the Jewish people congregated on College Street, like on the Sabbath. Like, most people were observant. Like, I come from a very observant family. My mother and father were very observant. And they would walk on College Street, you know, and it was like the, like you would say, the Jewish ghetto, because it was up from Spadina, although the Waverly Hotel was there already at that time.
It's a long time.
The Waverly Hotel.
I do.
Where the homeless go now. It was there, but from Spadina to about, I would say, way down up to Clinton Street, Rushton even, was the Jewish neighborhood. They all lived Euclid, Markham, Palmerston Boulevard. If you were rich, you lived on Palmerston Boulevard. If you weren't rich, you couldn't afford it. And even today, Palmerston Boulevard is considered a posh neighborhood.
Yeah.
And like Robert Street, Robert Major, Brunswick, Borden, Lippincott.
You remember those streets well.
And what was after Lippincott?
Bathurst.
It's already Bathurst.
Yeah, yeah.
So the after Bathurst was Markham. Markham Street. Still today, Markham Street, Euclid Street, still today.
Yeah. So you're saying Saturday afternoon people would be spazzering.
Yeah,
they would go for a stroll.
Like the adults would maybe sleep, or they would come from shul. They went to synagogue. They were observant, the Jews, because they were immigrants. Each, in 1942, some were still, had just come from the old country not too long previous to that, I think.
There were immigrants living there. When your family was living in 1923, when you were living there, who else was living in that house? You and your parents?
Me and my parents. What I remember: three boarders. My brother.
Two brothers.
And my sister was born 5 years after me. She was an accident.
Okay.
That's what I always say, because we're all close together. My brother and I are we're a year and a half apart. And my older brother was an immigrant. He came from the old country with my mother. My father came first.
Mm-hmm.
Then he brought my mother with my brother, and my brother took care of my mother, who was very sick on the boat, you know, and he nursed her. He was very good to my mother. He's 10 years our senior, and we all lived on Major Street.
So,
and we had a summer kitchen.
What's that?
Like they added on, a kitchen. She used to go out there to cook instead of dirtying her kitchen.
Oh.
We called it a summer kitchen.
It was like on the back porch. It was like a back porch type of kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was your parents and three children, and then your sister and three boarders.
It was a three-story house.
is in two stories.
It's a two-story house?
And then when my aunt came from the old country, they brought my mother's sister, she slept in the dining room.
There you go. Yeah. So your parents helped pay, I guess, helped pay for the mortgage by having these boarders live with you.
Well, they were relatives, cousins.
Ah.
They were my father's cousins. Max Feldman,
mm-hmm.
and Gio was Max's nephew, and then they brought over Louis Feldman, who was Gio's, like it was all related, and they had no place to go, so they all stayed in the, that was before I was married, because when I got married, I took over the third bed, the bedroom. But the upstairs, when my parents lived on Main Street, there was a tenant. They lived in two rooms, and in the middle room were these three boarders, a twin bed.
So what does that add up to? A lot of relatives and your family, children, two generations, and then another relative came, plus two boarders. How many people were living under that roof?
Six. Ten.
Yeah, usually. And my mother used to work hard. She carried...
Because she cooked it. In those days, it was room and board.
Yeah.
So she cooked for everybody.
And she shopped in Kensington without a car.
And so she shopped and she slept. Yeah.
She worked hard. But she did. She really did. You think we work hard, boy. Nothing like they did. But...
Yeah, they did work. So let me understand. You lived there, and then you got married in 1942. And what happened in 1942?
When I,
in terms of living at 67 Major,
I moved out. My mother bought me a cedar chest, and she filled it with linen, mm-hmm. and I left it at home. And I went with my husband during the war. We traveled.
Talk about that a little bit, please.
We traveled. His first posting was in 1942, and we spent our honeymoon night, the night we were married, on the train going to Ottawa. And his first job was in Ottawa. And we lived in a boarding house with the shoemaker and his wife. And two other wireless operators lived there, too. And so, that's where I went the night I was married.
See, a wireless operator
in
those days knew Morse code, because that's what they used to communicate, was Morse code, like dot dash. And that's what my dad knew. So he was positioned in Ottawa to listen for German... Morse code signals.
German and Japanese.
Japanese was when you went to Vancouver. But when they were in Ottawa, they were listening for the German...
Submarines.
The submarines. There was German submarines in the St. Lawrence River. Not many people knew that, but there were. That's what my dad was listening.
And I guess that's one language that everybody speaks. I mean, the Morse code is the Morse code, so it doesn't matter what country it's from, it's the Morse code. So he was very specialized. Your husband was very, your dad was very specialized.
He was exempt from the army because of it. It was vital war work, it was called.
Uh-huh. So he was exempt from the army, but he was doing work for the country.
He was doing work for the country, but officially he was never in the army. He was discharged after 1 month from the army.
Yeah, they used to have...
it was like a secret. It was top secret.
They used to have... conscription for the army.
Yes.
Well, he was conscripted, so he was 1 month in the army. But he would have been exempt because he helped support his mother.
Mm-hmm.
His mother was a widow. His father died when my husband was only 17, 18. And his father was only 47. Mm-hmm. And he helped support his mother, so he maybe would have been exempt regardless. But he had this job. He got this job. He studied for it to become a wireless operator. It was quite a lot of books, I tell you. And then later years, he became a gemologist. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a specialty in jewelry, and he worked for H. Williams and Company on Church Street till he died. Mm-hmm. He went into work when he was sick.
Well, it sounds like he was quite...
he was very
organized and disciplined. Well, he learned the Morse code, and then he learned all about this.
He had to leave school, you see, when he was 18, because there was no way of support.
It was the Depression, so he had to leave school. There was no safety net or social net that existed now.
And he was very studious, and he studied it a lot. He did a lot. He did a math course, and he did a jewelry course, and became a gemologist. He did a lot. He loved woodworking. He was quite the man. He was worth knowing, I'll tell you.
Good for you. So you chose well, and he chose well too.
Yes, I hope so.
Okay, so in 1945 you returned to Toronto.
Yeah, after the war, uh-huh. He was stationed in Lethbridge, Alberta, mm-hmm. and that's where they gave him, and I couldn't find a place to live. In North Battleford, I mean.
Well, yeah.
North Battleford. And, you know, they still had outhouses in North Battleford at that time. And I went home because we were staying in a hotel, you know. It was too expensive. So I went home to Major Street. And shortly thereafter, he resigned. And he was offered a job with the United Nations. Ooh. And... he couldn't take his family in Malartic, to go to the Malartic. I don't know. That's what they said. And he didn't go because he couldn't take me, and I already had Herbie. Mm-hmm.
I forget where he went, but I remember the story that they wanted to use his Morse code skills, right?
Yeah.
And
as a wireless operator, he was...
It was in northern Canada somewhere?
Yeah, way up north.
Way up north. I forget where. Some small
His friend took it. He was single. His name was Harry Rash. And he went up there for about a year. You can't go up there without, you know, it was in the middle of nowhere. And you couldn't take a family, so...
So 1945, you came and he followed you back here. And would you just tell us for our recording where you moved to when you came back in 1945?
I stayed with my mother.
So you were back at 67 Major.
Yeah, and then I took over the flat.
That means you took over the second floor.
And that's when I went to work in Toronto. I worked for Dominion Life Insurance Company. And then I became pregnant.
But you already had one child?
No.
Oh, that's when you became pregnant.
He was born in 1947. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I worked at Dominion Life. My brother got me the job. He used to examine the applicants for
older
insurance.
Brother was a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and my younger brother was a dentist.
Well-educated.
Yeah, we all had the opportunity. My older brother was... very education conscious, and he wanted us all to go to university. That's why I went to Harvard Collegiate, because Harvard Collegiate led to university. It didn't lead to anything else, pretty much. But when I became engaged, my father said, I remember it like today, he said, you have to know how to earn a living.
Ooh.
So I left Harvard. Uh-huh. I was in fourth year, and I went to Central Commerce for 8 months, got a job on Spadina Avenue, $8 a week.
Oh my God. What year was that then?
When I came back,
1945. $8
a week. That was 1942. That's when I started to go with Maury. When I started to go with Maury, I had to... So it's 1938-39, I went to school to Harvard.
Okay, and that's when your father said... Well, that's interesting, because there were people at that time who thought, you really just have to get a husband. And earning...
Well, if you didn't get a husband at 19, you were lost, I'll tell you that much.
when you were really getting old.
The old maid.
Right.
You wouldn't...
Since we're talking about this, can you think back a little bit to what dating was like? What did you and your friends do at 15, 16, 18?
We went to the show on Saturday, usually.
Now, a boy and girl together? Or
no, two girls.
A group of girls would go.
Yeah, we would go to the show, or we would hang out. But as a child, we played house, a great deal of house.
And what did that mean? How did we play house?
We had dolls, and we played house, you know.
Even as a teenager?
Doctor, yeah. No, as a teenager, no. A teenager, you already start to experiment with cigarettes. At that time.
Okay, so let's not move too quickly. When you played house, the girls played and they had dolls and you were
Yeah, we
mothers.
All played. We were mothers or somebody was a sister and somebody was a doctor and you know, we copied the nuns a lot. But we all, we helped in the house a lot, all of us. All the children helped. It was hard times, you know, when I was growing up.
Well,
it was
have
depression.
All the... Right, and you didn't have the automatic washing machine.
We had a piano at home, and I took piano lessons.
Let's come back for a minute. So as a young child, you were playing house. Then you said the teenagers were trying out smoking. I want to hear a little more about the dating or what things were like when you were 15, when you were 17.
Well, when I was 16, I had my first date with a boy... Cole was his name, and I borrowed a dress from the tenant that lived at our house, and she loaned me, I was a kid, a 16, and she loaned me a black dress, and he took me to, at that time, I didn't know how old I was, to the Hotel Embassy, and my first drink was a gin gimlet.
At 16, Ma.
But you remember, that's a lot of years ago that you remember what you drank.
Yeah. I don't drink, you see. I don't drink, that's why I remember it. And every time I did drink, I used to say gin gimlet because that's what I knew. He was an older boy, you know. He was a friend of my girlfriend's brother. And the brother took out a girl, and I was like a double date.
Okay, so you were 16, and how old was this older boy?
He must have been about 20.
Oh, yeah. So
21.
And how did you get to the hotel where you had for that gin gimlet?
Hotel Embassy. By streetcar.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And what did you wear on your feet?
Shoes.
But sensible shoes or heels?
Heels.
Yeah.
Well, the heels weren't like now.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
you were heels and the borrowed dress.
Bored black dress.
Any makeup?
Yeah, sure. 16, you wore makeup.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I was married when I was 19. I was still in school. I was in Harvard Collegiate when I started to go with my husband.
Was your husband also in Harvard Collegiate?
No, he went to Central Tech.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Well, was Daddy working when you met him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because my dad's father had died.
Right.
So he had left. He had to leave school to support his younger brother and his mother.
Mm-hmm. That was the way it was.
There was an older brother too. There was an older brother too that helped.
And do you remember a second date? Did you go with Cole again or somebody else?
No, I didn't. I dated my later on. That's how I met my husband. I dated my sister-in-law's brother. Took me out, and he took me up to they used to have boys clubs, and he took me to this club Rito, and my husband was there, and he took his phone number, and he asked me out, and that's when we started to go together.
Who noticed who first? Did your husband notice you, or
noticed him? Yeah, he noticed me first.
So was the club Rito like the boys' club?
It's a boys' club.
Okay.
And it was on College Street, above a store. But I forget which store.
But College near where?
Between Spadina and Major.
So right in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
So that was part of what we call Harvard Village now.
Oh, is that what you call Harvard Village?
Now we're calling it that.
Oh.
Yeah. So this... Tell us a little bit when you met your husband. And so he saw you at the Rideau Club.
Yeah.
And he took your number.
And he took my number from Phil, who, this is Phil. He took me out.
Uh-huh. At my, so you were with Phil that night?
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah. And then my husband asked me out, and we went about, we started to go steady. Like, I didn't date that much. I dated a non-Jewish boy, Wilmot Hill. Took me out once.
This I did not know.
Was my brother's boyfriend. He had a crush on me, and then when I started to go with my husband, he had a crush on Reva. I have a picture of him here. I don't know what happened to him after the war, you know. Reva, my sister, asked me, what happened to Wilmot? However,
what's his name? I'll Google him.
Yeah, Google him. Maybe he's still living. Now he'd be 95. He's not living. Anyway.
What was his name?
Wilmot Hill. Wilmot Hill. Hill.
And when you and your husband got married?
At the Shudley House.
That's just what I was going to ask you. What was the Shudley House?
It was like a... Like now, what can I compare it to where they get married? It was just a hall.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, it wasn't a synagogue.
And did you have family there friends in addition?
I had a big wedding.
Oh, you did? What does big mean? 60 people?
Oh, no, it was more. Because my husband's family was big and my family is big. And I had a maid of honor. My sister was my maid of honor. She's 5 years younger. And it was a nice wedding, actually. Full course dinner.
And a rabbi married you?
Rabbi Zimmerman, who lived across the street from us on Major Street.
Oh, so he knew
and
the
family.
And
he signed the exhibit, the ketubah.
Ketubah. Yeah, yeah. Were there any shuls in the neighborhood at that time?
Yeah, the shul we went to was on Beverly Street. There were a lot of shuls on Beverly Street. The Henry Street shul, the Upter, which is now the Chart Villa.
Mm-hmm.
So that Chart Villa, the Upter went with the Chart Villa, and they were on Beverly Street. And my father belonged to the Upter. He was from Apatow.
What's that?
From Poland, Apatow.
Oh, that's the name of the town or the village where he was from. Now, there's a synagogue right now on Brunswick, just north of Harvard, called the Nariver. Was that there at that time? No.
I don't remember that.
Okay. Were there any other synagogues in the neighborhood?
Henry Street,
But north of college, north. In our neighborhood. Or any shtiebels?
No.
No.
Not that I remember. All I remember was the rabbi. He had a lot of traffic right across the street from us, 63, 67. He was, I don't know what number, 60.
To come back, you were talking about this was a very Jewish neighborhood.
Yeah. There was one Christian on Major Street.
You know, you keep anticipating my questions. I was going to ask you about others.
One Christian, but I don't know. But I don't know his name.
Mainly
Jews. You can... go from one all the way to Bloor Street.
And what language did people? What did you speak at home?
We speak Yiddish.
You spoke Yiddish at home, and a lot of your friends the same thing.
Mostly we Yiddish.
So how old were you when you learned English?
I spoke to my mother in Yiddish all her life. My mother was a housewife, and she worked hard, and she didn't know any other language. My father could already. He worked for Tea and Company. Mm-hmm. You remember Tea and Company?
For sure.
Well, he worked for Tea and Company. He met the public, you know, and he could speak English. And, you know, he read, he could sign his name. My mother was basically, you would say, illiterate. Most women...
She eventually learned English.
She understood us. But
she couldn't read anything.
No.
Could she read Yiddish?
Yiddish.
She could read Yiddish, and she spoke that.
They Hebrew, too.
They
Dubbin, you see.
No, not Hebrew, just the Yiddish.
My mother could
spoke read. Hebrew? No, she spoke Yiddish.
Jewish, you know.
Yeah, I certainly do. Yeah. So as long as you lived there, there were changes.
I spoke to my mother always in Jewish, always. Mm-hmm. Till she died even. You know, she was a very sick woman.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit. I copied this picture of this fisherman who was.
And we used
what it, when he was there on the street because he was functioning from the sidewalk.
We used to have peddlers come with rugs, on a wagon, with a horse and wagon pulled, and there was rugs, actual rugs, and my mother used to buy them, you know, because you would buy them on credit. A quarter a week, every Sunday or something. That's how she bought my trousseau.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? That is. How did they get your attention? Did they? What did they do?
The fisherman used to yell "Vabe,"
which means
women, 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 and they used to come out, and they. The rug men, I forget how he used to. Some of them rang a bell.
They had a big noisy bell.
The sharpeners, men who sharpen knives, used to come also with a little wagon like that with all the sharpeners. They used to sharpen the knives and they would ring a bell.
What else came to your door?
Came to my door?
The knives, the fish,
the milkman would come.
With horses. I remember the horses. As a kid, I remember the horses.
They had horse and buggy.
They had
cars.
So the person with the knives didn't have a horse, but the milkman had a horse.
Yeah.
And the fishman, he didn't have a horse.
No, they came, they just, their little wagon. But the carpet man did have a horse.
And that's how your mother bought some carpets for you for your trousseau?
No, she didn't buy me carpets. She bought me linen.
Oh, linen. Also from somebody coming to the door?
Yeah.
So
not to the door. It was
on the street.
Like they go from door to door. They would sell, vendors.
Right. Was there also somebody, I'm thinking of the refrigerator, the kind, what you had at
ice
that time?
Icebox. You had an iceman would come, Greenberg was his name, and he would sell a block of ice, mm-hmm. and you have a basin underneath the icebox, and it would drip down the water, and when the ice melted, you bought another one.
So did he come daily? How long did this block of ice last?
I don't know. I can't recall, but I believe it was they would come every day. And he was also a coal man in the winter. In the winter, you didn't need an ice man because you put it in the summer kitchen. It was cold, you know.
So that same person delivered the coal in the cold
winter
and the ice in the hot weather.
Greenberg. What's his name?
Clear memories for you.
Oh, yeah. I haven't talked about it for years. My sister would remember more. She's 5 years younger.
What about the horses? Where did the horses... Where did they put the horses at
you
night?
You know, my girlfriend, Shirley...
Keshen,
no? No. I have two girlfriends named Shirley. Shirley Wolfish was her... Her father was a peddler. He would go junk man, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he had his horse in his backyard.
Oh, my God.
And the wagon.
So he had some...
Shitty Wolfish.
So he had some kind of little protection for the horse, I guess, in the winter.
Yeah, sure.
In
the backyard.
On Major Street?
On Major near Bloor. They lived near Bloor. And once both two sons were lawyers, both sons Wolfish.
But look how his father did something that was much more basic, and then their children were educated.
Most children were educated. Because if you didn't become a doctor, a lawyer, or a dentist, there was no place for a Jew to go. Because my brother wasn't accepted in the hospital in Toronto for his internship.
Because they didn't want any Jews.
They didn't take many Jews into medicine either. There was a quota for Jewish people at that time.
And where did your brother study medicine?
University of Toronto.
Oh, so he got in. He was one of the few who got in.
He came here from the old country when he was 10. Uh-huh. So he was a big boy when, you know, he worked at the post office sorting mail to help for his education.
So he worked and he went to medical school.
And my father was a tailor.
And then, but your brother could not do an internship or residency here. So he had to go to some other province?
Yeah, he went to the United States.
Where did he go? Was it New York or Boston?
No.
And then, did he come back to Toronto or did he stay in the States?
Yes, he practiced here in Toronto. He contacted TB while he was in an internship. Mm-hmm. And he went to London, the TB clinic. He was there for, I think, a year.
That must have been a big worry for your family.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And then he came back. He married his childhood sweetheart. And they lived on, you know where they lived? On Bathurst Street. In a duplex. Is it? I don't know if it's still there. Bathurst College.
Oh, it's right in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's where they lived.
Now, you said your father was a tailor. Did he work from home, or did he have a little space somewhere else?
No, he worked for Teton Company.
Oh, that's what he did at Teton Company.
Not the first job, but that's one of his jobs at Teton Company. He worked there for 25 years. He got a watch. Mm-hmm. From them. Then when he retired, he worked for the Maple Leaf Gardens. If you remember the Maple Leaf Garden, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, he used to fix the uniforms for the ushers.
Oh, so he continued to work. When you said Maple Leaf Gardens, I thought he must have changed his work, but no, he continued to be a tailor.
He used to take the kids in to see the hockey game. Don't ask.
He must have fond memories.
As kids, we used to think he owned the building because he would just walk in there and say, "Hello, Mr. Birnbaum.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Joe." He knew Harry Ballard. Oh, what was his name? Harry Ballard.
I'm sure he made some suits on the side for people.
Yeah, he did. He had a man that, his name was Jack Mason. He made suits. Like my father measured, he was like a,
freelancing.
Where does
is this going to be on the, all on the?
It's all on. It's
what
all.
What are you going to? You're not going to use all of it.
No, little bits and pieces.
Because it's not.
You have to ask about the 3M Club, right?
Okay, Herb was telling me about.
My mother mentioned it.
Okay, but you showed me a picture of the 3M Club. You and your friends.
Yes, and Triple M Club.
So would you just talk about that a little, please?
What did it stand for again?
Mary Modern Missies.
Mary Modern Missies.
And we were a bunch of girls that just got together and just had fun.
And you got together?
This is Wilma Hill.
That's Wilma, the second date.
Wilma Hill.
The third date.
I'll show you my wedding picture after.
Is that it right here?
No, that's my girlfriend.
So tell me about the Triple M. How old were you and what did you do?
I want to see how old I was. I don't remember. We were in our teens.
Uh-huh.
In our teens. And we just got together and, we didn't do anything. We had rings. We paid dues,
But you had a club.
We had a club. And it was fun. Here they are. Here we are. See? I know, I can't remember her name. Betty. Nettie Mendelson.
I remember them all.
You all seem to be wearing white overalls. And white shirts.
Yeah, that was, you know.
It just happened. It wasn't a uniform.
We were just kids, 16, 17. Yeah. And we were like friends. You know, we'd go together or go to a movie or whatever.
Now, you talked about the ice and the coal. Did the furnace change during the years that you were there? Do you remember it changing?
It
was coal the whole time that you were there.
No.
It changed.
Later years, they put in oil.
Okay. And what about the ice box? Did that change?
Yeah.
To what?
The fridge.
Uh-huh. But they weren't self-defrosting yet.
No.
Initially, you had to defrost.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. When I lived upstairs, I already had a 1945, when I came back from the war, I already had a fridge. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I moved with that fridge here.
And you brought it to this house that we're in right now?
That went up from Major Street.
Do you have a new one, or that's still?
I have a new one. It's in the basement.
Right. Were there any people who had work at home, what we call cottage industry? Were any of the men or the women working from their homes that you knew about?
Mr. Dell was a printer. No, he didn't work from home. Babbins, I don't know. She didn't have a husband. I don't know what they did. The Rosses didn't work at home. The Mintzes, he did something from at home. I think he was an insurance man.
And he worked from his home, maybe.
I think so. Because I don't remember.
You talked about when you went on dates, you would take the streetcar. Either you walked to college or you took a streetcar.
Mostly you would go, if you went on a date, you would go to a club. Uh-huh. They would take you to the club.
But to talk about the transportation now,
one boy, Harry Siegel, he was killed in the war, but he had a car at that time. He belonged to this Club Rito, but he was from a wealthy family. But most people, you walked or you took the streetcar.
So
you didn't take taxis either, because if they had money to take you out, there wasn't that much.
Mm-hmm. So people use the streetcars.
Yeah.
Now, you said the back lane where you walked was muddy. Were all the back lanes muddy?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Did you use the back lanes at any other times other than to get to school?
Well, once Wilmot Hill tried to teach me how to ride a bicycle on the back lane, and that's about it.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, I...
But as kids, I remember playing in the back lane.
They played ball, yeah.
Yeah, because you weren't on the main street. You played in the lane.
Was it paved at that point? Or
they
not
played,
paved?
They
still not
played baseball, the kids, in the back lane.
Stickball, we called it then.
Right. Okay, so later on, it was used more for kids playing and having a good time.
Yeah,
what about when your children were young and you were living there, where did your children play?
Oh, they went to nursery at 3 mm-hmm. and 4.
Yeah. And
when we came here, mm-hmm. they played in the backyard. Mm-hmm. I have a big yard here.
And when you were downtown, what was in your backyard? What was behind your home?
We had, my father had a grapevine. And he had a pear tree and flower my mother planted, and grass. We had grass in the backyard.
And was the grape, how did you use the grapes?
My father made, I don't know if you know what vishnik is.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
What do you call it in English? What do you call
it? Schnapps?
No, it's delicious. I don't know what you call it in English. He made wine in a barrel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So the grapes were not wasted.
No. And they also bought grapes for that, for the wine.
Uh-huh.
Because it wasn't enough.
is the Vishnik a more, is that more strong, more concentrated than wine?
Vishnik is like a delicacy. It's a brandy.
A brandy. Okay.
That's what it is.
And the pears? Did you use the pears?
Yeah, we canned. My mother canned pineapple, pears. She worked hard. Oh,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah. Those women did work hard.
Did they ever work hard?
Yeah. So she had a very active kitchen, too, and a very active washing machine.
We all helped. We all helped. Mm-hmm. My sister helped. We used to wash the chairs every Thursday. White chairs painted.
White. With those muddy back gardens. Yeah. Do you remember anything about garbage collection?
No. Don't.
Anything about the roads? I mean, what was on the roads?
Gravel.
How were they used?
Gravel.
So they weren't. So you're saying some of them were not.
Some were paved. Uh-huh. Later on, they were paved. But the beginning, it was gravel, like hard gravel.
Right. Yeah.
Like pavement.
And so most people used public transportation, and there were these kind of horse and buggies, or people just using their carts and coming to sell things to you. Do you remember when there began to be some more cars, or was that not while you were down there?
Not many cars.
Yeah.
That I remember. You had to be pretty well.
We didn't even have a car when we moved up here, so you can imagine.
And the nearest store to me was the butcher at Bathurst and Wilson.
Ooh, so that was a schlep.
Mm-hmm. And that was where the bus stopped. When I cried buckets when I moved up here. Oh, so I hated this house. No wonder I'm still here.
How many years ago was that? How many years have you been in this house?
61.
Ooh. So you cried for what?
Be 60 years.
Wow.
But my husband didn't want to move. Every time he always used to say, I don't want to be house poor. I don't want to be house poor. So we stayed on. And then when we went ready to go into a condo, we went to look at a condo. We were already at Covington, the condos. He came in, he said, yeah, and we assigned, we'll get a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. And then we came home and he opened the front door and he says, he says, I'll be lost up there. He said, I won't have the garden, and we never moved. And after he died, I wasn't prepared to move. Mm-hmm. And now I'm really not prepared to move. I still have the big backyard and
we've been here for more than half a century. That's a lot of years. This is really
but
home.
Neighbors are nice to me.
Uh-huh, that's good.
Like I have a lot of Orthodox neighbors, and they revere old people, and they are very nice to me. They didn't know how old I was until this year.
Did you have a special birthday this year?
Well, she kept asking me. And she says, I know you last year you were in your 80s, but you can't be in your 80s forever. So I told her, and she told her next door neighbor, and so it went. But now I don't tell my age.
So we shouldn't say on the recorder how old you are?
No.
Okay. When I'm your age and I look like you, I'm going to make sure everybody knows. Yeah, if I'm lucky enough to look like you.
That's what everybody says.
Her father lived to be
95.
1996, but I think I saw his birth certificate. It was all in Polish, that said, which would have made him 98.
So your father lived a long life.
He was, and when he died, we all said, it didn't bother anybody. He could have lived a little longer. Never sick a day in his life. Didn't have arthritis. Walked from Major Street to the Island Ferry.
Woo.
Walked every day to work, to Eaton's and back. Eaton's was down on Queen Street, and we lived on Major Street. Yeah. He walked there and back. Ate black bread.
He did something right. I mean, that sounds very right to me.
You know, she cooked different than we do, but you know, it was a well-balanced meal. Like, she made a forspice and soup, and the vegetable was in the forspice and so on. But you know, it was a well-balanced, and he was strong. Wasn't he strong? He gave you a handshake like you wouldn't believe.
Sounds like he was a remarkable man.
What a man.
The only thing he drank was, every night at dinner, before he sat down, he had a shot.
One shot.
One shot of whiskey, That was it. Sat down, ate his meal, didn't talk until he finished eating, then he talked. But he didn't have anything else to drink.
So maybe we should all have a shot of whiskey and live 98 and healthy.
He was okay. He was only in the hospital once, that I remember it, for prostate.
Well, but you also said earlier that he was a runner. So he,
No.
My husband.
Who was the runner? Oh, that was your husband, and your father was... So your husband was a runner, and your father was the walker, a tailor who was a major walker. Got it. Okay.
Well, he didn't have a car,
Why should you pay for a car ticket?
It was depression. It was hard growing up. If I got 10 cents for the show a week, that was a lot. And the reason I had money was because I used to get money for a drink at school at Harvard. You take your lunch, and I used to save it up, and that's how I would have a quarter. Yeah, it was hard times. It wasn't easy for my parents when my brother was at school, my older brother.
So they sacrificed because they wanted him to have good education.
Well, he wanted it. He believed in it. He did.
I'm sure your parents believed in it, too.
Yeah, well, it was that or nothing. Most of our generation, the men are professional. Like I told you, my girlfriend's brothers, two brothers, lawyers. My younger brother was a dentist, but he was in the Air Force, and he went... When the war was over, he went through the he went back to school, got his matriculation from Harvard, and then he went to university and became a dentist.
When you were living in that neighborhood, was it considered a safe neighborhood?
Yeah. There wasn't much crime. There was a Chinese laundry on the corner of Ulster and Major. Mm-hmm. Across the road from that was a grocery store. You know, corner.
Well, that's where all the grocery stores were, was on corners in those neighborhoods. You can still see it in the architecture that's there now. They're all converted.
Yeah. But mostly they shopped in Kensington. But Passover, my mother used to give her, she believed in supporting a Jewish, so she would give an order to this little grocery store. It was too expensive to shop in a grocery store. It's like here now, you know, you go into Pusateri, you pay through the nose.
But you're saying your family shopped mainly in the market because the prices were better.
Well, she'd carried home baskets of fruit, chickens.
And 10 people. She went there every day, probably.
Fish. Everything.
Do you remember how they sold the chickens? Do you have any?
They sold the chickens live. They would go and pick a hen. They would take it to the shochet and kill it. And then And then they would pluck it. And to save a dime or whatever it cost to have somebody pluck it, you plucked it yourself.
So your mother was busy plucking feathers.
You plucked the chicken.
Well, that's changed a lot. Nobody's buying a live chicken these days.
Well, even there's a time before Yom Kippur where you make a sacrifice, and now they do it with money. But when I was growing up, they did it with live chicken. My mother used to bring home a live chicken, and she would...
Around her head,
around our heads, and she would say, "Death to the chicken, long life to," you know. She would. Going back, boy, I was a kid.
Yeah, but those were the rituals of the time and the traditions of the time.
They were religious. They used to go tashlich. I don't know what they call it now. To feed the fish. We used to walk to the island, and we used to take bread and feed the fish.
You're looking at your watch.
No, I'm not. I'm not picked up till 5 o'clock. I'm fine.
I'm wondering if you had any connection at all with the university being close by. Did that affect you in any way? Were you aware?
No, I didn't go to university. I went to from Harvard. I was in my fourth year. I didn't graduate, and I went to Central Commerce for 8 months. And then I got a job after 8 months.
Well, I think we've covered an awful lot today. It's been fabulous listening to you. But I'm wondering, Tilly or Herb, if there's something that I did not bring up that you might have thought about before I came that would have been interesting to talk about all those years ago when you lived in the neighborhood.
I can't think of anything about your life or life down there that you have told me.
I used to play double dutch and skipping a lot. You know, we would play alleys.
Oh, yeah.
You remember alleys?
I sure do. Yeah.
We used to shoot alleys. The girls, too. And if you had money, you know, the kids would have bicycles, they would have roller skates
that you attach to your shoes.
Yeah.
That's what I grew up
with. My brother didn't get roller skates till after his bar mitzvah.
With some of the bar mitzvah money?
My mother, we didn't have money for... Every Passover we would get new clothes, new shoes, new clothes, but we didn't have money for, my mother used to call it luxuries in Jewish.
What's the word in Yiddish?
Luxus, I think. And we didn't have that, but we had, I was always dressed to the nth.
Really?
My father was a tailor, he made me suits.
Oh, so your father made clothes for you?
My mother sewed too for us, made dresses. Yeah. It was hard growing up because they had to save money to bring over a sibling, and they had to, the kids were at school. If you had children at school, they had to support the children. It was hard.
So how old were the classes? How many kids were in a class at school?
In the 20s, 30.
Same as now. That hasn't changed, I guess.
But that was another thing, that they didn't have much money, but they still used some of their money to bring other family members from Europe.
Yeah, they did. There was an immigration man called Mr. Wise. I don't remember. Angela Wise, my father used to call him. Angela would be Angela Sydney. Angela.
Angela's fine.
and Wise was his name, and he was like he would bring them over. He would lay out the money, and they would.
He would lay out the money, but then the families would repay him, probably with some interest on top of it for his money.
So he would bring them over and finance their fares?
You know, my father came over with my mother's father, and my mother's father didn't like it here, and he went back to the old country, and he was killed by in the pogrom. My mother's father. Yeah. But my father came, and his brother brought him. They had to have a sponsor. Like the immigrants today, the Filipinos. They have to have a sponsor. So they had a sponsor, and he brought a sister. The two brothers brought the sister. They brought a niece.
And they brought them into their homes, too.
Yeah, oftentimes.
For the most part. Kept them there until they got on their own feet.
Yeah, well, they lived, my father lived with his brother for a while. And then when my mother came, they lived on Euclid for a little while. And then they moved to Major. They bought the house. They lived on Markham, too. That was before me.
Well.
It's a wonder I remember all this.
Have you heard some new stories, Herb?
I never knew about Wilmot Hill. I Googled them and nothing came up. except if there's a Wilmot Hill winery in near Sydney. Not Nova Scotia, but
Australia.
Australia. So maybe the guy became made it big, Ma.
He used to come into the house. I can't remember when he didn't. And then after the war, we didn't see him.
Maybe he was killed somewhere.
Maybe he was killed in the war. Could be.
I think we're going to wind up now, but I want to say to you, Tilly, and to you, Herb, for making the connection, for making the shidduch.
Go up and bring down my wedding pitch. I want to show her.
Okay.
I just want to show you just for the...
I'm very happy to see it, but hello. While the tape is on, I just want to say thank you, Tilly. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I really enjoyed speaking to you.
I hope you can use some of it, and if you can't, it's also good. It was a nice afternoon.
For me, too. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.